Welcome to Season 2 of Beyond the Wall, a Game of Thrones LCG podcast brought to you by Istral and Darknotch. We'd like to thank FFG and CardGameDB for their continued support, and the fantastic AGOT community as a whole for being the sole reason we do this cast. Thank you for letting us take you once again beyond the wall.
Welcome to another episode of Beyond the Wall. Today we're going to have a brief intro, then we're going to have some analysis on the new FAQ with Florian Maths. We'll have a small chat with Ryan Jones about a team format tournament he ran. And then we're going to have a discussion with the designer of one of the newest champion cards, Steve Simone. And then finally, we're going to have some non-existent closing comments.
Well, this is episode 4, and this...
Of the new season.
I guess it's slightly less new now. And this is one in which we wound up getting some fairly unexpected news.
Yeah, we got a new announcement with the FAQ coming in, which is pretty big. We got a spoiler from T-Covenant, which is kind of cool because it's an awesome clansman.
Yeah, well, Team Covenant got their spoiler early in the week. The FAQ, of course, being the big news that I think wasn't expected, but the spoiler that they got earlier in the week, I was pretty excited about. And then, like, a day later, FFG announced that the Veilmen would be in stores soon and was shipping out and will be in stores on the 20th, officially, which means that some stores might have it earlier than that, which, again, FFG is really pushing product fast right now.
Yeah, I guess they want that SCE to just keep changing things to change up, which is cool.
They want everything to be out before Gen Con, I guess.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Mm-hmm. But since they announced that, AGOT Cards got spoilers of the entire chapter pack up on AGOT Cards, so you can have a look at that already. Those aren't official. We're not going to go into those this week, but hopefully if the cards are released and they either go up on CardGameDB or officially in someone's store, then we can review them next week.
Yep.
News tournament-wise, it's actually been a really slow week for the Annals. I haven't seen any entries at the time we're recording for this weekend. And normally it takes people a day or two to get them in. But I sort of scoured AGOT Cards, CardGameDB, and a couple of other sites to try and see if there were some tournaments this weekend. And I didn't get a whole bunch. I only got news from about three tournaments.
In other words, one in Canada, the Finches got to play each other, and I think they actually didn't play the final game. They went home and played the next day.
I heard the same thing. So that was Britt, and then Lauren, our guest for the chapter pack review, she was playing Abera, Darklings, Dark Words, but lost.
She was playing her Worlds deck, basically,
yeah,
I think.
With just changes accordingly, but Britt beat her with... Well, she says Britt beat her with Mira, so I assume that means he was playing Stark or a very easy Shadow. Other SCs I heard news from, there was one in Denver that was won by a Baron Knights of the Realm running Val, which is an odd restricted card choice for Baron, or for Knights of the Realm anyway. And then one in Sheffield in the UK. I don't actually know who won that, but I know that an old way... Greyjoy Old Way with Naval Escort was in the finals against either Lanny HOD Mander or Lanny Knights of the Realm, and I don't know which one won, and I don't know which one didn't win, just to make that sentence needlessly complicated.
Excellent. That's what we want on our show, as much complication as possible.
Yes. Any other news that you can think of?
No, I think those are all the big pieces.
We got lucky, I would say. FFG threw us a bone in that they released a new FAQ on Thursday, the day after PC1C records. So we'll actually get first coverage of this.
I feel privileged. Is that the correct answer? We're joined today by a recurring guest to take a look at this FAQ. The great, the one and only Florian Maths.
It's me!
For the day, fake Italian rather than German, which...
It surely is more lovely to greet you in a fake Italian accent than it is in a German accent.
been an authentic German accent.
Yeah.
The German's just scary. At least this made me think of Mario Kart, which is, you know, at least fun.
Maybe before we delve into either the article or the FAQ or the tournament rules or any of those changes, I mean, the biggest point here is the timing of this release, and I'm not entirely sure I'm happy with it. This is cutting the SC season into basically two FAQs.
Yeah, I don't like it. I mean, I really, really wanted an FAQ. It would have been super awesome to have this at the beginning of the Store Championship season, but I think they probably could have waited till the end of the Store Championship season to put this in place and have it in place for regionals instead of doing what they did. Like, there wasn't a crazy broken thing that was totally ruining the game, in my opinion. There was some not super fun things to play with, but nothing they had to address immediately.
Yeah,
it's kind of weird, I admit that, but I don't know. I don't have those sentiments. It's just a normal FAQ, and I always like when there's something new, the new impulse to the game. Maybe there's a problem with the annals. Maybe that's why Alex is salty. But...
right, because I'm going to have to switch to the new FAQ.
Yeah.
I mean, it is kind of... It's probably more a propriety thing than anything else, because really... I'm more excited about the meta with these changes, and I'm more engaged with it, and players on the whole will be. But we also acknowledge that you can't have an FAQ every, you know, 3 weeks. You've got to have a sort of season to let things develop. And the time to do this FAQ would have been, you know, second week of January or something like that. So I feel it's late rather than early.
Yeah, because we didn't have one before the SC season, so yeah. I totally agree.
Especially given what it does. What it's doing is addressing things that we knew were there after Stalic.
Yeah, probably the only thing that was, you know, a surprise, or maybe not a surprise, but wasn't there after Stalic, was the Unburnt combo with the Lufna part.
I don't know. I guess I'm happy that there's an FAQ because it changes things up and it brings me more challenges. But overall, I'm not very happy with the timing. It's also kind of odd that this FAQ... has a date on the FAQ itself, the 28th of January, so it's clearly ready for a while, but doesn't go into play until the Monday where you guys will be hearing this, even though it was released on Thursday. So lots of dates to keep track of. All right. Well, FAQ-wise, there is an article explaining some of the decisions. I think most of them are fairly self-explanatory. I'm still very happy that they released this. But yeah. I don't think there's anything particularly juicy in the article itself, unless you guys feel otherwise.
No, I don't think so. I think the FAQ hit the nail on the head. But, yeah, the article was like, for the obvious reasons, for the obvious reasons.
Yeah. And they say they updated the tournament rules, which, you know, obviously got me excited. But that's just the authorized cards section changed, and then the restricted lists and changed. And, in fact, I think there's a bug. The removed cards section still lists the two cards that were removed from the Joust list last FAQ. So
I didn't even realize that they updated the tournament rules.
Yeah, well, they really didn't. I mean,
okay.
They just made sure that the restricted lists were up to date, and even then it looks sort of half-hearted. So, I mean, I guess that means we can jump straight into the FAQ itself. Which
yeah.
End would you like to start at, Florian?
I have it open at the moment, so let's just start with the first thing, and it's unburned. And now you can no longer indefinitely save a character with unburned if you're running a Lufin apart.
Yeah.
I don't know what I'm supposed to think of this change. I don't think it was ever really broken, but people were crying about it, so they changed it anyway. That's sort of FAQ, maybe?
I heard a rumor that there was some kind of combo with it where you could claim power. Now, I don't know what that combo is or was, but if that actually existed, then that would have been a good reason. Or if that's just a horrible rumor that's circulating.
Claim power off what? Off saving a character?
I guess. I have no idea. But you could only do it once, right? If it kept dying, or could you keep doing it if you could keep killing it?
Well, how can you keep killing it? The best way to keep killing things is things like Harrenhal, and you
terminal
can't
burn
use it more than three times.
Yeah, I don't know.
The only thing that comes to mind is, isn't there this Greyjoy character that you can
Charles
save? Reichstra? And yeah, this guy.
Yeah, but if he has three or more power on him, he gets discarded from play, cannot be saved.
Yeah.
So it doesn't work. No, it seems odd. I agree with Florian. I don't think this was necessary unless there really was some sort of bug like that. I suspect this is to appease people. I suspect it's because it was unintentional, and so they decided since it was unintentional they should fix it. But I don't think it was broken.
No, there's lots of ways around it. I mean, he calls it thinking the response. You get rid of the attachment through some kind of attachment removal. It wasn't we saw it a bunch at the last SC I was at, and it wasn't game-winning.
The irony here is that everyone's complaining about Harrenhal, but nobody sees that Harrenhal can just cancel this for basically almost free when you're Valoring. So,
yeah.
I don't know. Yeah.
I think this one was... Actually... Normally, this is the point where I'm supposed to get up in arms about there being errata to cards. And I realized this when someone suggested errata to me a couple weeks ago. And given the fact that we have Thrones 2.0 on the horizon, and that really my biggest objection to errata is that it's a barrier of entry for new players. It's hard to keep track of. It keeps accumulating, and it keeps getting worse. But knowing that there's this reset on the horizon, I'm actually okay with errata. I don't think it's elegant, but I don't have the same sort of visceral reaction as I normally have.
I am glad I'm recording this, Alex, because I can just throw this back anytime you bring it up now.
Only for 1.0, eh?
You didn't say that. I have the exact wording you used. That was not there. There was no if and then.
The next FAQ is going to have like 20 pages of unnecessary errata just to make Alex rage.
All right, so what's next on the list?
The next entry is Crossing the Mammoth Ford.
Oh, I'm so happy to have heard this. Like, the river plots are just so boring now. We've seen them for like almost a full year. I was so happy to see that they were errating this so that we won't see the river plots probably anymore. I think that this change will basically mean the death of the river plots.
But do you like the change itself?
I don't care. Anything that got rid of the river plots made me happy, so yes, I like the change.
I don't like it because I think they could just use the banned list. It would be way easier, way more understandable, and accessible for new players. Because if a card is on the banned list, it's just there. You can't play it. Okay. When you have like 20 errata and you like have to figure out what the card does, and I'm a little Alex here. I think they could use the banned list more actively.
But they took all this time and effort to get rid of the banned list so that we don't have one now.
Yeah.
And then they'd have to create a whole new list. See?
No. I think I'm with even with my relaxing attitude on errata, I think that this is not a particularly elegant erratum. I also think that this, in combination with it still being restricted, is functionally banning it, but just more complicated. This is probably not the way I would have approached this.
Okay.
I'm also.
But you both agree that it's good that something happened to it, right?
Well,
You just don't like what happened to it.
You've been playing in the meta more recently than I have because you've been able to make it out to store championships. The new Ravens are making a pretty big impact on the river plots.
I don't necessarily agree here, because the thing is, if you only cancel one Riverblood activation with one Raven, it's still kind of a wash. You're really only getting ahead if you have the Raven two times or three times, and that's not really that easy to accomplish. So,
well, it does help. It does help avoid snowballing. If you cancel the first cross in the Mummer's Ford on turn three, you've avoided two cards that he could then use to fuel his Darkwing Starkwords or whatever the case is. But I don't think that necessarily the new Raven was enough, but I certainly think that the need wasn't necessarily as dire as it was around Worlds, and I think that this was probably not the best way to go about it.
The other problem with the Raven is that the decks that are running the river plots draw into the Raven more frequently, which makes the river plots the counter to the river plots with the Raven.
That's fair enough.
Yeah.
No, I could have just gone with banning this.
Yeah.
Sure. I think I agree. You could have just banned it. You could have whatevered it. I think doing something to the rivers was good because I just didn't want to see them anymore.
Actually, I don't mind most of the rivers. I think, you know, I'm not sick of people using the other ones.
Okay, I agree. But most of the reason people use the other ones was this one. I'm sick of this one. And I'm glad it's gone forever.
All right. I'll give us the next one. So this is Harrenhal, which apparently should have the text "kill a character you own and control" in order to initiate the cancel. And it still has cannot be triggered if it has three or more gold tokens. So this is now the twice errated card from the Conquest and Defiance cycle. And again, I know people have been complaining about this. I know this is a change to Mel's favor. We'll be talking about it. It's certainly a very irritating thing to have happen to you, and I'm not necessarily unhappy with them curbing it, but I also think that having to errata the card twice probably means you were doing it the wrong way.
Okay, but, I mean, one errata or two errata, it doesn't matter, right? Either way, you got to go look for the errata.
That's one erratum, two erratic. Come on, John.
One errata, two errata, neck errata, ret errata.
Six errata. Erratim. All right. So, you can't be mad about that.
Functionally, this kill a character you own and control is really only for one thing, and that's the Mel's favor interaction.
No, I can think of other things.
Okay, yeah. I mean, people are using Taken Captive and some other stuff, but
I can think of more. Seductive Promise.
Yeah. That wasn't a major issue, because at that point, you were controlling it forever.
Well, I know, but it wouldn't work now.
No, it would not work now.
Ah, it's nice to see the pedantry getting taken back to Alex.
So what do you guys think, then, of this change?
I think it was necessary. Some decks just don't have the tools to deal with this. Must favor Harrenhal stuff, like the Viper, completely unplayable. I mean, it's not the worst thing to have the Viper not being playable for some time, but after a while, it just gets pretty boring that every deck has to build around no attachments characters or just have some way of interacting with it, because you just cannot beat it if you are not prepared for it. It's like...
Yeah, it was forcing decks to build in a certain way, and I think anything that opens up the potential for deck building is a good thing.
But you think that this an important part of that, or do you think that the restriction that we'll talk about later would have been sufficient? Or
I think the combination of the two is necessary to fully open it up, because I think the restricted choice of Albera is going to be Mel's favor in a large percentage of the cases, like probably 80% of Paradox will still run favor.
I'll question that when we get to the restricted list, but what about you, Florian? Do you think that these two in combination are enough to give that opening?
I'm going to take a different approach to answer this question. I think they're going to restrict Harrenhal in the next FAQ just for the true trifecta of errata. It's just...
Well, if they restrict it, they better get rid of those errata.
You know that's not going to happen.
I know. All right. So that's all the errata. So there are two additions to the restricted list, and it's pretty obvious what they're targeted at. The first is Mel's favor, and the second is Danny. So I guess we were sort of touching on Mel's favor there. We can dig into it a little bit deeper. Do you think this surprised anyone?
No.
Not really.
Do you think it's overdue?
It should have been done at the beginning of the SC season.
Well, yes, but should it have been done before Worlds?
I don't think so. I think it needs some time to shine.
Yeah, I think I'd agree with that.
I also think it wasn't that bad before French NA became a thing, because Baron NA was good before, and like all the knight spills, but Baron NA really took it on a whole new level of efficiency with very efficient characters and just very streamlined. I think it's at the time now that this is gone, but it was fine before because there was still room to explore with it.
So the biggest question, and I alluded to it earlier, was Mel's favor is restricted. Now, what does that mean for, first of all, the Barrow agenda, and second of all, for Barrow builds in general? Does it become the restricted card of choice in all of them, in a third of them? How does that work out?
I'm going to say 75% are still going to run it as a restricted card, because Barrow doesn't have a ton of great restricted cards.
Well, they have Val, which is a reasonably good choice.
Yeah, but people have Sam now to draw.
They also have Preston, who's a draw engine as well.
Only in the Knights.
Right. Well, no, he's a draw engine everywhere, but he's particularly...
Paired with Jamie, a two-card draw engine.
I think we're going to see a whole lot of Melisandre's favor still, because it's the most irreplaceable effect of those restricted card choices. like, Val can be replaced with Samwell, as already mentioned. Mm-hmm. But Melisandre's favor just stealing a character is just so powerful and so unique that I think a lot of Baratheon decks are still going to resort to it.
Yeah. So do you think that this means that the Baron agenda just drops Val and adds in... I mean, the two versions we've seen so far have been either Narrow Escape or Val, and, you know, you think they just drop those, they put in Val's favor, and they're still a Tier 1 deck?
They're obviously not going to be as good as before, but I think you can just run Summer, King's Roads, Gilly, and Samwell, and have a good draw engine for your Barra NA deck.
Yeah, we might see less NA. Maybe we'll see some Knights, you know. Maybe we'll see Summer. You know, Barra had a nice Summer build. Maybe we'll see that come back.
So you think a little more variety, but still what percentage will be running Mel's favor? I would have pegged it at about 2/3, but I don't know if there'll be a resurgence of the Fear of Winter sort of Knights build pushing through. So
yeah, I'm going to stick with my 75%.
And Florian?
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment.
All right, and the second, then, obviously, is Daenerys Targaryen, and that seems to be primarily an Orc at another deck that came out of Worlds and Stalic, as well as a lot of other decks that have abused it. But the one that's hit most by this is the decks that were combining Long Lances with Dany, I think, the Black Sails, primarily. And my opinion is that that's enough to knock the Black Sails off the Tier 1 charts.
I would agree.
Interestingly enough that you didn't mention Maesters, who don't get to play Dany at all now, which I think is probably the biggest part of this restriction.
Really? I think that the Maesters can, and for a long time have been able to get away with
trading,
discarding things, recycling Dario. They have lots of other ways to kill and remove characters that I don't think this is particularly necessary.
Well, I think Daenerys was just too good in that deck, because you have this innate synergy between Daenerys plus weapon attachment, and the weapon attachments and the fighting pace you're running anyway, because you want to send your masters.
Yeah, I still think that deck may have been hit, but I still think that Targ Maesters as an archetype has lots of viable room to play. I think that Targ Black Sails as an archetype doesn't have that many places to go.
It's probably gone now, yeah. You need that extra stand from those long lances to abuse Dany more.
Yeah.
Although I think the main concept that you can just fetch out to be a dragon each turn still is kind of viable. And with the new weenies that make your characters not kneel intrigue and power challenges, I think that could be salvaged. Because I think the overall power level of the meta is a bit lower right now, as it always is when new cards hit the restricted list.
Yeah. And I think the underlying theme here is there were three big decks to come out of Worlds and Stalic, and they were Baron No Agenda, Targ Black Sails, and Lani Darkwings Dark Words, and all three of those have taken a hit. I think the Baron No Agenda needs some serious rethinking. I think the Targ Black Sails has been blown out of the water for the moment. I think the Lani Darkwings Dark Words survives this, though.
Yeah, I think it's fine. Like, what was the hit it took?
Well, the rivers, primarily.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, but there's lots of versions that don't run rivers for the Lani. They run...
Yeah, I've seen Negotiations, and then the one that won Field of Fire was actually running City Plots, but not running Negotiations. It was running Castellan. Yeah.
Although Negotiations is really not all that great at the moment, because that plot is extremely bad against Greenseer Raven, because... If you split your card advantage over three or four plots, like you do with rivers, it's not that bad to get one river canceled, but getting your one Negotiations canceled with a raven is pretty darn bad.
Crippling.
Yeah. Descriptive word.
So anything else on the sort of first order, like what this directly impacts before we start talking about how the meta at large might respond to this? Anything else that's just the immediate impact?
Well, before we move off of Dany, I think Dany's still going to see a lot of play in a lot of Targ decks. Right? What do you guys think is the percentage of Targ decks running Dany?
Like 99%, maybe.
Exactly. Me too.
The thing is, what other restricted card is there for Targ that is really as good as Daenerys? It's just everything that Targ needs. It's a huge body. And now that Melisandre's favor is restricted, it's a little bit less of a problem for the Targaryen players. I mean, you have attachment removal, but it's still a beating if you get your Daenerys stolen, and you can't deal with it. And the other thing is, she complements Burn just so well that I think you just have to run her in Targ.
Yep, I have to agree with that.
I'm going to take a slightly opposite view, because I think that we're starting to see certain stall decks come back. I think Harrenhal's being pushed down a little lower, that we might see some reuse of Hatchling's Feast, that we might see House of Dreams come back with Preston, potentially. And there are always some other candidates that make it in there. I still think it'll be extremely prevalent, but I don't think it'll hit 99%. I think it will be, again, two-thirds of the restricted.
Well, there are always some oddballs.
Well, I mean, what's Mira at right now? Mira's two-thirds, too, I think. No, half, actually. So I would put her around Mira standard.
People just don't know what they're doing.
that's also a fair point.
Statistics that disprove my point are always wrong.
Well, it's a shame that they always happen. All right. Well, that's sort of the primary impact. It's at least as far as I see it, this is definitely a hit at the three decks that came most out of those two big events, and which is why I'm really surprised that this didn't happen in January. I mean, the article says, you know, it turns out that these were still being played, and I'm like, well, of course.
What was going to make them go away? It's still the top decks.
So what do you think those decks being touched changes for the meta? First thing I can think of is Lufin Apart being a very important force, with Mel's Favor diminishing somewhat in its power.
I think a lot of the new cards are very powerful, and we're going to see a whole bunch of them being played. And I think they're actually changing and shaping the meta more than these changes, to be honest. But maybe that's because everyone just wants to play it right now.
I think that Mattel Illuvina part can be a driving force in the initial stages of the new meta, because it has the powerful draw, and it's kind of novel, and it doesn't take a whole... The main thing you have to consider when building a deck for a new meta is that you want to be proactive, because reactive decks only get better over time when the meta is being figured out. So I think John's Mattel Illuvina Par deck is a good starting point for building a deck right now. And yeah, other than that, people are going to try to figure out how to play the old decks, as they always do. People always love to play the old decks and try to make them work in the new meta. So that's probably what we're going to see over the course of the next few weeks or so.
So you think by the old decks you mean those three and just adjusted according to what we're seeing there? And what about the losers of the current meta? The houses like, I think Greyjoy is the worst qualification ratio, and Martell wasn't looking too hot. What's happening to them with these changes? Is Greyjoy improved? Is Martell improved?
Martell's improved, right? Because, I mean, the Baratheon decks just ripped holes in poor Martell, since they're so reliant on a couple of key characters that don't have the no attachment keyword. So I think that's definitely helped them, that Baratheon got a little bit of a hit.
I still don't think this is a favorable matchup for Martell, though, because the other problem hasn't been addressed in this FAQ. I think Fury of the Stag is a huge problem when you're trying to play Mattel in any meta, because the effect is just so ridiculous, and if you have Bannerman on the field or you have the Viper on the field, it just wrecks your entire day. And I honestly have no idea why they had to unrestrict that one. I cannot fathom what the idea behind that was.
Yeah,
I can't really figure that out either.
One of the things that reminds me of is that I did hear some people complaining that this FAQ wasn't doing enough. And that's actually one point where I wholly disagree. It's not so much whether this FAQ could have done more and could have taken more things off the list and on the list. It certainly could have. It always could have. But at the start of SC, we would have expected a small nudge. Middle of SC, we would have expected no nudge at all, or, you know, one emergency fix because something was broken. I think complaining that this FAQ isn't big enough is really pushing things.
Yeah, I think the FAQ is of adequate proportions, and they shouldn't overdo it and ruin the whole SC season by doing something like taking off a great control card and then see how the entire meta goes to basically crap.
Well, I don't mind an FAQ being a large shakeup if the meta needs it, or if you really want to experiment with something new. I could see them doing this for regionals and you know, really changing things up so it's not the same as SCs. But I think that halfway through a season, I'm already sort of miffed at the fact that they put in an FAQ that probably wasn't necessary. Had they made it a big one, I think that would have been just too much.
Yeah, they were surgical here, and I think that this will give them a little bit of data to take a look at to see how those changes affected the meta, and then maybe they'll be able to really do a shakeup for, you know, nationals or regionals.
Well, any other thoughts pertaining to this FAQ?
Are there rules questions at the end of the FAQ?
Oh, there are. How did I have to
how
get
do
my
you, of all persons, miss that?
Oh, no, this is staying in the recording to my forever shame.
You had to mention the rules, eh?
There weren't actually any rules changes. There were
By the way, a little off topic, but I was really disappointed that you didn't make a running gag out of the no or out of your baby crying. I think that would have been excellent. A little bit of sitcom comedy.
Hey, we've used the no twice in, out of three episodes, and my baby's cried in one. We're building up to, you know, the sounds of our households, and then eventually we'll just sit there with and record with all the background noise, and we won't have to edit. It'll be great.
Did you hear my wife earlier? She's so proud of you at pledging your allegiance to your child.
Pledging my allegiance to my child, yeah. There's a picture on Facebook on Beyond the Wall from today where I got my daughter to sit on an ice sculpture of the Iron Throne. And obviously, I had to find some way to sort of hold her up because it wasn't necessarily very safe on the ice sculpture. So I'm kneeling in front of her with a hand holding her up, but pledging fealty to the Iron Throne.
See, if you go off topic, at least like two or three times in each cast, it gets much more like a 2C1C. It's amazing.
True enough. So you were calling me out on the new rules. There actually aren't any new rules, as I was saying. There are only clarifications in two FAQ or two frequently asked questions. And in this case, they really, really are frequently asked questions. The rules are already in place to handle these situations. They already exist. But the first question there is one that has come up since the castle plots have existed in the draft pact. And it's, when do the effects of castle plots resolve? And the answer is, after all, when revealed. It's a passive, so just like Bay of Ice and other things, it resolves then.
I mean, it was relevant when Tagoro asked whether you get prize for a plot if it's moved, when it's moved to your use pile while it's blank.
And that's essentially the same question, yeah. It's still a triggering or initiating from out of play.
But other than that, I haven't seen a lot of applications for this one.
So does that mean things that trigger off of the responses to when revealed would go off before, or no?
No, this is a passive. Passives go off before responses. You knew that, John.
I did know that, but I know that some of our listeners don't. So I was
Of course.
Of course.
My listeners want to hear this. No. This is just you. The other question, I'm actually not entirely sure where it comes from. It's sort of been implicitly in the rules for a long time, but it's also very rarely relevant. So I'm surprised to hear this have to be stated again. And this is the order. When multiple cards leave play simultaneously, who decides the order in which they're placed in a specified play area? And we already had it for dead piles as a long-standing sort of ruling, but now it's clarified that that's the case for dead pile, deck, discard pile. The owner decides.
Yeah, all these filthy mess of players had to get into the FAQ.
Messy players.
My master died. I have to order my 10 chains in the correct order so I can get them back with the bronze link.
Well, they've been doing that for ages. It just hasn't ever really come up as a question that people were challenging.
Yeah, I have no idea.
Right. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing what people do. Of all of this, I'm most looking forward or hoping that Mel's Favor takes a dip, not necessarily as a percentage of Bera decks, but just that Bera itself has been toned down a little bit, plus the interaction with Harrenhal. So with Bera toned down a little bit, I think that will open up a lot of room for Lufen Apart, and that's what I'm most excited about coming out of this FAQ. I want to see what people do with some of these characters that we haven't seen played ever or in a long time.
I want to see Clansman. Yeah. I'm hyped.
Oh, man.
I build a Clansman deck with a Lufen Apart, and I have no idea what it does. I haven't played with it yet, but I'm super hyped, and I'm going to try it out, and hopefully it's going to be great, because what is not to like about Clansman? They're awesome.
And that new Gunther Son of Gurn is
so good.
Really fun. I don't know how good he's going to be in practice. I think people are overrating him. He has huge potential, don't get me wrong.
I think he would have been better, like, 1.5 years ago when Bloodthirst was really a thing.
Yes.
Like, God, yes. I attack you, let me draw my whole deck.
Exactly. It's like,
now we're on equal footing.
Yeah.
I think that that's what's most exciting to me about this FAQ is the prospect of Bera with Mel's Favor being a lesser force in the meta. John?
You hit the nail on the head for me. That's exactly what I'm excited about. I'm excited about seeing more decks Lufen Apart and just opening that space. Maybe we'll see some more Greyjoy now.
I would like to see more Greyjoy. Greyjoy was having a really, really tough matchup against Bera for a couple of reasons. I was just finding that was a brick wall that I could not overcome with Greyjoy. And so I might be able to delve back into my favorite house. Well, thank you, Florian. Did we even introduce Florian? We did?
I did.
You did. You did.
I think so.
All right. Well, then thank you, Anonymous, for joining us.
Bracket, insert snappy sign up here, bracket.
We're joined today by Ryan Jones. For those of you who don't know, not only is he a world champion and a proud owner of a hammer, he's also someone who did that playing the same house and agenda combination in both events. So he certainly stands out in Thrones history. I don't think that's something we've seen.
The thing that marks me most about Ryan is that he goes by the form name Coolio. And I think that's very bold.
This is two episodes in a row you've tried to attribute nicknames that don't...
Ryan S.D. Coolio Jones.
Sure. Close enough.
What brings you to the cast today, Ryan?
Well, just last weekend I ran a unique joust tournament, and I thought I would share the particulars and the results with you. It's called Thrones War, and the last war is an acronym for Weekend at Ryan's. But that doesn't sound quite as menacing as Thrones War. It originated about 3 years ago when there was very old and fun Northern California tournament called CaliCon that was around for years and years. And when the San Francisco meta started to lose members, mostly people coming south, that dropped off. And I didn't want there to be the same break between worlds and regionals that would have been there without a tournament. So I just decided to pick up the reins and rename it. Add a little twist to it. So what we do, technically an invitational tournament, because I get kind of OCD about the amount of people at the tournament. A 24 for me is perfect, especially with our size. We're not really excluding anyone by inviting 24 people. And what it allows us to do is have six kings or queens, team leaders, as long as I can get confirmation from people a couple weeks before the tournament, which is a lot harder than it sounds. We put everyone's name and we put all six houses into a pool, and the six kings and queens get together and I run an auction, and everyone's given a certain amount of play money with which to acquire three players on their team and one house to play with. And once that's all announced, everyone gets on those four player teams, gets to, you know, talk about decks and talk about strategy, and they all have to play the same house is the big thing there. At the end of it, we end up having 24 people in a five rounds of Swiss joust with a cut to the top eight. And we have an individual winner, just the standard, as well as a team that wins. And the way that's calculated is we have just total wins for the team versus everyone else's total wins. So there's no win percentage or losses counted. And we do end up using the wins in the cut to add to that amount. So getting a couple people in the auction that can make the cut ends up going a long ways for you.
So I assume that you must force pairings so you can't play against your own team.
In the Swiss pairings, I end up having to do everything by hand because I couldn't find a program to let me put in those like exclusions to have you not paired with your own team. But I promise everyone you won't be paired with your teammates during Swiss. Once the top eight is announced, all bets are off. You can run into your teammates. It ends up just being too much for me and for the competitors.
Well, every once in a while, a Tyrion will put a crossbow bolt and a Tywin. I mean, there's infighting once you get to the top.
We actually had three Barra players end up in the cut, and they all ended up facing each other on the way to the finals there. So they had some of that classic Baratheon infighting.
So the first thing I noticed, you mentioned six houses. So poor neutral faction just gets cast aside, right?
Yeah. It hasn't come up yet, but I have rules in place for if people that couldn't commit soon enough to be in the tournament and then therefore be in the pool of players for the auction, if any of those people somehow finds the money or the time to come, they're going to be put on the neutral team and they'll be our wildlings in the north, even if it's just one person.
That's like a punishment. So you fly down to Rhythos, yeah, even though you weren't really invited, but you know, cost you thousands. And as a bonus, you get to play neutral.
That's right.
And lose the tournament.
Yeah. Although if you take it all down on your own, I guess you'd get all four of the winning team's prizes, which this year were custom playmats.
Yeah. Well, yeah, could you possibly get more wins than any other house combined if you were alone? So how do you handle the auction? This sounds kind of interesting, but it also feels like most sporting events where I would get picked last.
We ended up settling on an auction because everyone has a fair shot at getting anyone they really want. I found a random fantasy football website that has a free sign-up until the league actually starts. But since we're not concerned with actually playing out a fantasy football game, we just use their auction software and then dump the league. So it's all automated online. I do have to end up assigning player and house names to current NFL players. So there's a little grid of, you know, like, oh, I think the best one ever was Ramsey's De Leon was the Rams defense. That one was pretty easy to make the connection with. But I gave everybody 40 play dollars, and we just take turns in a snaking order, putting up one person for auction. And then all the software takes care of the rest at the end. You know, some people, I think this year, John Krause spent $18 or $19 on House Lannister, almost half of his budget, but still ended up getting second in the team event. So it kind of comes down to luck, but being able to play the auction well does really well for your team.
So not just the auction well, did you see or have you seen emerging a pattern of teamwork in the house builds? Can they play the same agendas? Do they work in such a way that one of them might be better if the environment's rush? And the, I mean, have you seen team strategies?
It's definitely apparent that your deck building and strategy as a team is completely different than an individual tournament, even just down to the cards you end up using. I know Jeff Kane, who ended up getting third at our tournament and did really well for Team Baratheon, he came up with the idea of, yeah, I'll put in Robert's loyalists. They get +2 strength when attacking anyone except for Baratheon. The chances of me hitting Baratheon are quite low today. And the flip side of that was, in his top four match against Chris Schoenthal, he flopped one character, and it was, of course, Robert's loyalists.
Against another House Barra.
So it was actually the guy who ended up drafting him, Chris. And Chris handily won that game. So that kind of backfired once he got to the cut. But making the top four in one of his first big tournaments was a pretty good thing anyway.
Because the first thing that would occur to me would be that, for instance, Lannister with power behind the throne would generally be quite strong because you would expect to face no other Lannisters and therefore really only worry about Martell as your biggest intrigue force.
Absolutely. And you may already know that that's the deck that ended up winning it all.
Were all the Lannisters playing the same deck, or?
No, absolutely not. There was a very interesting aloof and apart clansman deck run by Davey. He ended up making the top eight, and then the winning Power Behind the Throne deck And I think there were a couple no agendas on top of that. So I really saw very little of the same deck from this, from a house. I don't know if that was on purpose where they tried to hedge their bets and try and get the right matchups all day, but.
So you have a winner from this tournament, House Baratheon, so all the players in, that were playing that get some prize, and you have the top player, John Wright, who we actually briefly mentioned last week and had made this amazing play, I think you described to me, of using Cold Hands on his Mel's favored Cersei and his own Tywin on an Aftermath turn to get them both to close the game in the challenges.
Yeah, that was a killer final game. He was playing against Chris Schoenthal, who was the leader of Team Baratheon that ended up winning the team event. They did such a great job. Their fourth worst, like their worst person on their team, went 3-2, and I think he missed the cut by one. I think he might have been the odd man out. And then the other three of them made the cut, and they ended up winning three or four games in the cut. I think it was three. So they pulled away from Team Lannister handily in the top eight there. But in that final game, I think Chris was in a great position to win. He played Fallen from Favor, and John Wright playing Car Behind the Throne and hit Aftermath, and he very smartly said that Chris could go first, waiting for the Melisandre's favor. So when that happened on the second marshaling, John was able to play the cold hands.
To
get both of his characters back. And that ended up being too much, which is, I think.
So it does seem to me, I'm looking at the stats now, which someone, I assume you kindly entered into the annals.
It was actually
like
our resident historian, Alex Esposito, who is adamant about putting everything into the annals.
Oh,
he's
yeah,
a good
he
man.
Is actually. It does look, though, like he was playing for Targ, and Targ did not do well. What happened there?
They did not do so well. I think all four of them were playing negotiations, which makes it look kind of funny in the annals that there's just all the negotiations at the bottom of the list as the restricted cards. Apparently that's not a very good restricted card. No, two of them decided to play Heir to Iron Throne. I think there's just a little bit of inconsistency with perhaps the way they built it or the deck in general. I know they ran into a lot of Neil. I know whenever I played it, I drew all my kill cards on the first turn, and just Dark Wings, Dark Words, getting every single thing it needs at every moment is always a fun thing to go up against. There was a Lufin Apart Dragons deck abusing the Unburnt on Danny and other big hitters that did really well early, but kind of flamed out and played by one of our local players, Margo. So there was some signs of life early on for Targ, but I think they just got some pretty bad beats there.
And I guess sort of my final question, given that Thrones 2.0 is on the horizon, this was the next year you run this, and I assume you will, you'll have eight houses.
Still kind of up in the air, I think. I'll have to wait and see how it feels once 2.0 is finally out. It feels like ages until then, but I'm excited to try and wrap this format around 2.0 and continue its existence.
Well, it sounds really fun, so I can see why you'd want to.
I can't even go back to individual jousting now. I feel like they need to do this for Worlds, too.
Yeah, I mean, houses are what are competing for the Iron Throne. It kind of makes sense.
Yeah, and the thing I love about it is that even with a mixed meta of just world-caliber players and people that are a bit more casual and haven't put in as much time, there's the individual tournament where all the heavy hitters are going for it, and then there's the lower guys are still, even if they're 0-4 going into the fifth round, it still means as much as the first round to your team, because the win's a win no matter when you get it.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not just fighting to not get last. You're trying to help out your team on the top.
Yeah, I think that's actually something that was brought up in the European team event in general. There seemed to be some interesting strategizing based on team strategy and the like.
Well, I mean, you probably get like almost zero people dropping from the tournament.
Oh, not one.
You mentioned it's an invitational tournament, very exclusive. So when you next run it, you'll invite us, right?
Oh, yeah, if you want to make the trip.
Well, I hear California's nice this time of year. People really liked when we had John Bruno on to talk about his champion card. We decided we're going to try and make this our thing and hunt down champions and get them to spoil their cards. So we have here the Gen Con champion from 2013, Steven Simone.
It's good to be back on the cast, guys. And, good to speak with you again.
So tell us a little bit about the process behind getting a card design and what you wound up with.
So the key to winning card designs in Game of Thrones is actually in doing well in the melee, because the joust, I mean, you just got to make the cut, but you really have to make the final table at melee or top eight to really hone in on the design, especially at Gen Con when there's only one design. Getting to the card is really about placing well in both events. So, you know, at first critical day is melee. But once I did that, I was able to make the cut in joust, and I didn't win it, but I was able to get overall. Better or worse, I have a card design without winning a joust championship.
You came second.
Yeah. No, I understand. John or the Naj did exactly what I did the following year. And how does that feel, Dark Naj?
Kind of bittersweet, but at the same time, it's sweet. Card design is great, and I mean, second is nothing to laugh at. And then you went on into Worlds to top 16 and play in the very top again that same year. So it was obvious that you were deserving of the card design.
Yeah, no, I felt deserving to put a lot of work in. So I guess without further ado, I can jump into it. So I wanted to make it, just like John Bruno on his first snow design, I wanted to make a meta-defining plot. And I don't know if mine is going to be as meta-defining as First Snow. And well, I guess I'll explain the card and then I'll explain why. But so my plot is called The Withering Cold, and it is a 5 gold, 5 initiative, 1 claim plot, and it's prize 3, and all players skip the standing phase is the text.
That's a very interesting card, because there is a card that is similar already in the current card pool in Edict from the Rock, I think. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's it.
Where, if it dominance,
yes.
your all players skip the standing phase this round?
Right, yeah. So this takes away the whole if you win dominance aspect of it, which is obviously why the prize was incorporated. But you would think that these two plots combined could have a very profound and powerful effect on a game state.
So I originally designed it for a few reasons. I think back when I made it, I was thinking about, you know, prize mechanic and how that interacts with rush decks. So it kind of may be interesting as a rush plot in Lannister, for example, maybe in a deck similar to the one that you did so well in this past Gen Con with. So you can drop that turn 1, give them 3 power on their house for turn 2, and try to close them out in turn 2.
Yeah, and anything that you've knelt stays knelt so that they stay open for that that second turn. I have a couple of questions. So I have lots of ideas of how to use this, but was the name The Withering Cold a nod to the first snow of winter, or was that just something you felt was thematic? Or
I definitely wanted the title for a number of reasons. I am a fan of Patrick Rothfuss, and I really like The Name of the Wind, that book.
Phenomenal book. Phenomenal.
Oh, probably one of the best.
He is kind of a douche, though, for never writing anymore. So that, and also John Bruno, The First Snow of Winter, and it is kind of a nod to the meta-defining plot. Corey is telling me to make an agenda, but I was more, I thought making an agenda would take a long time, and I won last year, and now my card's coming out. And yeah, it's a definite throw right there. I don't think it will be as much of a meta-defining plot, because in the case of Bruno's plot, whenever you build a deck, you have to say, you know, how hard does this get owned by First Snow? I don't think that'll be the case with mine. You won't have to build your deck and say, how hard does this deck get owned by The Withering Cold? But, you know, we'll see what kind of a crazy European deck comes out of this plot.
So tell us about the art, too.
Yeah, so the art is me lying on the ground. I was supposed to be a member of Stannis' army because I'm a big Bera fan. And I was dying outside of Winterfell. So Vigilant really works well with my plot, which is another reason I made it.
Well, that's actually the first thing that comes to mind for me is as a deck-building decision. Obviously, this calls to mind either kneeling your opponent's characters or having characters that will stand themselves, Vengeful, Vigilant, or not kneeling to attack. And as a general rule, it actually kind of seems to be like many of those non-kneelers are 4-cost or higher characters, which we'll see a lot more play in theory in this cycle. So it actually looks like it meshes fairly well with what's coming out in this cycle.
Yeah. Another thing that's interesting with it would be like taking Arianne out of shadows and dominance to really surprise your opponent and then win next turn. because all your opponent's, you know, stuff is melee, and he wasn't really expecting it, and then you go to the spheres and just, you know, trounce. The one disappointment with my plot, I really wanted to see it played in melee. I don't know if that's ever going to happen.
At prize three, I think.
I really want to think it would be an interesting plot in melee. Like, even turn one would just be crazy.
Synergizes very well with Sir Robert Strong, who forces characters that come into play to be knelt if there's more characters than their cost in your dead pile.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I think it's going to be interesting. Like I said, I think it's something that you have to build around. And I like that concept of designing cards that you have to build around. You can't just throw it in every deck.
The other thing that I want to mention, because we talked about characters that stand themselves, that don't kneel, but actually sort of one of the second-order effects I can really see this being used for is trapping locations, especially influence in decks that were worried about Red Vengeance or Westeros Bleeds. If they're going to use them, they're stuck with the knelt.
Yeah, that is a good point. The opportunity cost of, you know, kneeling a location, knowing that you don't get it the following turn. Things like Guildhall and things, all those kind of items like that.
And even reducers. In a way, this, if you built for it, it also helps as a choke. Not on the turn you play it, but the turn afterwards.
Yeah.
I can see that being quite interesting. I'm not sure how that'll play out.
You actually just gave me a good idea, like attack from the sea and then flip into this plot at another point in the turn.
So I assume you're thinking that you're mostly going to be playing this in a deck where the prize three is actually a benefit.
Yeah, that would be the one thing. Or the other thing I was thinking, maybe some crazy person comes up with like a Lanny Hollow Hill that uses this as an opener if they have Infamous in their hand and it's a control deck and they have 7 gold turn one, they drop all those dumb Lanny control locations and say, all right, I'm done marshalling, go. And then they're off to a nice control start.
And, I mean, it is nice also in Baratheon and Greyjoy to be able to keep those characters knelt so that later on when they play their event that discards all the knelt characters, they have even more targets.
Yeah.
No, it gives you a one-turn build-up. You flip this because next turn in Dominance, you're going to be using that.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, the question that I really want to ask is, does playing this, then flipping it to Valadoharis, work? Or does Valadoharis still suck?
Valadoharis is an interesting card. I put that in some Bera decks with Black Cells, and I think everyone has, but it's fun. I don't know if it's still gonna. I don't know if this plot makes that plot good. It's a good question.
It's tough. It always looks so good on paper. You look at it, you're like, wow, this is gonna rule. I'm gonna own people with this.
I'm gonna strip people's icons and get rid of their
never works.
Cannot be saved. Or
every time I know. Every time I lose to the Viper, I'm like, I'm gonna put Valadoharis in my deck. I'll show you.
All right, Steve. We need one last thing from you, and that's a snappy sign off. Hit us.
I've been Steve, and I've been awesome.
Normally we have closing comments, John.
Yeah, but today our episode was a little long.
Yeah, and nobody wanted us to promote a tournament. Actually, that's not entirely true. There are 2 or 3 tournaments to promote, but not for this next weekend. So, bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Beyond the Wall. If you have any comments or would like to be featured on the cast, please let us know by email at beyondthewallpodcast@gmail.com or through Facebook at Beyond the Wall Podcast. If you've enjoyed the music, check out more of Antti Martikainen's work at the link embedded in the chapter data. See you all next week.
We'll have to make do with that, but that I guess that's snappy in German. What is snappy in German? Say snappy sign off.
That's difficult because you cannot translate it directly. It's just like,
give me a second.
That's perfect.
I'm worried.